Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello. Welcome to the We the People Blog Talk Radio Show for July 1st, 2008. Tonight we'll have Reverend Ted Pike, the director of the National Prayer Network, on talking a little bit about hate crime laws, that kind of thing. His website is truthtellers.org. And I think we have him here online. Can you hear us, Mr. Pike?
Yes, I can, David. Thanks
okay,
for having
good.
Me.
Thank you for coming. I just was really impressed with your website and what you're doing on the hate crime laws, especially, and some of the things you were saying, which I just kind of perused your site and saw that you were talking about how the Mossad and the ADL are all together, and they have these hit lists of conservative right-wing Christians. I thought that would be something that a lot of my listeners would like to hear. Why don't you tell us a little bit about who you are, what you've been doing, and what you'd like to talk about tonight?
Well, I'm the descendant of a patriotic Christian conservative family. My father and mother were both involved in Christian activism and broadcasting and so on. And back in as early as the mid-60s, we became aware that communism, most forms of liberalism and socialism and so on, were the direct descendants of Jewish activists who basically brought in Bolshevik communism to Russia in 1917 and spread out to bring liberalism and socialism to America and to the whole world, in fact. And when I was in my early 20s, I desired to write a book on this subject as an effort to bridge over from conspiracy theory over to the evangelical Christians, because the evangelicals, of course, have played a tremendous role in helping establish the Zionist state of Israel. They have had a policy of no criticism, unconditional support of Israel. And I believed that they needed to become informed on the other side of the coin, not just the roseate view of Israel, but what really has happened throughout literally the last 2,000 years as the Pharisees hijacked the Hebrew monotheism of the Old Testament and created their Babylonian Talmud and leading the Jewish people astray. And the fact of the matter is my quarrel is not with the Jewish people. It never was and never will be. It's with these evil Jewish leaders who are showing themselves extremely anti-Christian. And you mentioned ADL. Well, the ADL is an offshoot of B'nai B'rith International. It's a huge Jewish activist, liberal, anti-Christian activist organization with presences in about 55 nations of the world. And I've documented with a video, a film, about an 80-minute documentary, which is that everybody can watch on Google.com. And on Google, actually, the address is www.video.google.com. In my video, Hate Laws Making Criminals of Christians, I document how the ADL is the grandfather, the architect of so-called hate crimes laws, especially in the Western Hemisphere, which are even now in dozens of countries of Europe, Canada, Australia, even the United States, and in the 45 U.S. states. These hate laws are basically giving the government the right to limit our free speech, limit what can be said from the pulpit, and actually jail, indict, harass, financially exhaust Christians and patriots and conservatives who want to speak their mind.
I'm sure that most Christians apparently aren't all that aware of this kind of stuff.
Well, the Christians, I've been trying to alert the Christians, the evangelicals, about this since about 1988. I published my book in 1984, and then in 1987 I did a video documentary called The Other Israel, which is a 60-minute documentary, again, which is available. You can watch it free on Google.com. But around 1998, I became aware that in Canada, countries like Canada, Sweden, and other European countries, ADL was working very earnestly to put a noose of hate crimes legislation around the Christian world. And what I did was I began to document their attempts to establish a federal bureaucracy as early as 1990, which would put the ADL in the driver's seat of persecution of Christians and give them the reins of control from the federal government of the United States over all the states, controlling and defining hate crime legislation and penalties and reporting statistics and so on, as well as education for FBI, Justice Department, and local police. And I became very concerned about this, and I tried very, very hard in 1989 to help defeat the Hate Crime Statistic Act, which was an ADL invention. And under the Hate Crime Statistic Act, ADL was given, it was passed in 1990, they were given the right to instruct all federal law enforcement employees, as well as every policeman in every local precinct in the whole nation. And of course, ADL is an adjunct of a religious organization, B'nai B'rith, and here they are hypocritically mixing synagogue and state. The ADL has the right to come in and receive endorsement by the federal government, a mandate from the government to teach every policeman in the United States the twisted definitions of hate and hate crimes coming from the ADL. So what happened was that in 1990, the ADL fanned out across all 40, all 50 states and were successful in passing their hate crimes law, their model anti-hate hate law statute in 45 U.S. states. And already we have seen how this evil hate crimes law on the local level, the statewide level, has already been used to persecute Christians. For example, back in October of 2004, the ADL's one of the ADL's henchwomen in America, Lynn Abraham, who is a national executive board member of the ADL, she gave the order to have 11 Christians arrested for the so-called hate crime of witnessing the homosexuals during a big homosexual gay pride event in Philadelphia.
Right.
And what happened was she was determined to set a precedent of very severe persecution of Christians, which would radiate out into other precedents, other indictments among the other states. But these Christians were going to be arrested, they were thrown in the Justice Department jail for 21 hours, and their total penalties were 47 years in prison, something like $90,000 each, simply for singing a hymn and holding up Bible verses during a homosexual event.
Wasn't one of them released?
All of them eventually were released.
No, one of them though wasn't convicted of anything, right?
None of them were convicted. In fact, if anybody was convicted, it was Lynn Abraham. And it was at that period that I was able to get on the radio in literally hundreds of interviews around the country, and we were able to trumpet and blast that outrage, the fact of that outrage, out to the entire world. And so much flack, criticism came in against the district attorney's office and the corrupt Philadelphia justice system, that a higher court was able to overthrow Lynn Abraham and so on. But this is an example of how ADL, through their people in the justice system, are able to use these hate laws. You see, the law that gave her the authority to do that was the Pennsylvania ADL hate law. And in 44 other states in the union, there exist these hate laws that are like a cocked gun. They're ready to use there against preachers, against dissidents, free speech advocates, critics of Zionism, and so on.
I understand. Why do you think they've been so basically effective at getting their hate laws in place against Christians, especially being that, you know, the Christian people are trying to bless Israel to such a great extent, and here they are getting stabbed in the back while they're doing it.
Yeah, exactly.
So
you see,
why do you think that is?
Well, you see, ADL has tremendous power, and they work very closely with the Jewish-dominated media. And, of course, this brings up the reality that most big media in the United States is controlled by these evil Jewish activists. And, in fact, at my website, I have an article back about a year ago. People can go there. They can scroll back and find it. It's called Jews Confirm Big Media is Jewish. And
yeah.
I quote extensively from a popular Jewish website in which they let it all hang out. They just have page after page of lists of media corporations and production companies, broadcasting, publishing, on and on and on.
Right.
And I just link over that article, and people are very interested. That's a very popular article, and people can come to www.truthtellers.org and read that article for themselves. But what I'm saying is that the ADL is hand in glove with Hollywood and the
right.
big three TV networks and so on, as well as the U.S. government. And with that kind of clout and that kind of educational advantage and legal and ideological advantages, you see, they are able to come down to local legislators and involve themselves in full-scale lobbying efforts and a lot of idealistic propaganda about how there's an epidemic of hate in America, you know.
Right, and actually they're the ones that's doing the hating. But, you know, the thing is, if you know, hopefully you're preaching to the choir on this show. Most of my listeners, I'm hoping, already know all this stuff, so it's kind of redundant. But, you know, still, the people in the churches, by and large, are just totally dumbed down to this, and the pastors don't ever talk about it, so most
well,
of them
that's...
don't have a clue. However, you've been at it for a long time. What good do you think you've been? I mean, what successes do you think you've had so far?
Well, the truth of the matter is that during the 1990s, the evangelical church was oblivious to the hate crimes threat. And I tried in vain to awaken them to it. But, in fact, as late as probably to 2004, a poll was taken of evangelical youth, and some more than 90% of evangelical youth were in favor of hate crimes legislation.
Right.
And so they were... one of the reasons evangelicals haven't wanted to dramatize the hate crimes threat is because the whole system, the whole hate crimes ideology was invented by these Antichrist Jews for the sole purpose of entrapping Christians. And yet if a Christian, a leader, is to point his finger at the Jews, suddenly he becomes quote-unquote anti-Semitic in the eyes of ADL and so on, and ADL
right.
will come after him and do their best to ruin him. So it's the church has for the last at least 15, 20 years has gone after the ACLU, which is not quite so conspicuously Jewish as the ADL, although it is top-heavy with Jews. They've left the ADL alone and allowed the ADL to go along uncontested in persuading the states and doing their very best also. The ADL wants to establish a big federal hate crimes law, which would give federal authority over the states and over state law enforcement.
Okay, okay. Well, why do you think this is so important to them, though? Well, what is it they're trying to accomplish other than making all the Christian people mad?
Well, you have to remember that the head of the ADL, Abe Foxman, is a devout Orthodox Jew. Now, most people don't realize that. They think, well, here's this secular liberal Jew, and he's forgotten all about his background as a Jew and all that. Oh, no. Abe Foxman wrote a book about 3 years ago. It was called Never Again, The Threat of the New Antisemitism. And in that book, which I quote in some articles at Truth Tellers, he's very frank of his devout faith as a rabbinic Talmudic Jew. He believes the Messiah will come again, and that's not Jesus Christ, of course. We believe it'll be the Antichrist, but he's looking forward to the Messiah. He is very avid in encouraging young people in the neighborhood summer camps and things like that to rediscover their Talmudic Orthodox Jewish past and so on, encouraging them to go to Israel to see Judaism in action and so on. So here's a man who is anti-Christian down the line, you know, anti-Christian in the sense of promoting pornography, of promoting abortion, promoting homosexual rights, promoting all forms of liberalism. And you ask, well, why does he do this if he's a devoutly religious Jew? Well, this takes us back into the Talmud and the Kabbalah, the Zohar of the Jews, which is very these semi-secret writings, which are the highest forms of inspired scripture for modern observant Jews, very frank in their ambition to overthrow the power of Christians and Gentiles and to do whatever is necessary to subvert their societies so that their societies will be broken down and their economic systems even will be broken down so a Judaic one world order will be able to rise in their place. And this is, 2,000 years ago, the Jews shouted, crucify him, crucify him. His blood be upon us and our children. They crucified and they rejected their true Messiah, their true Israel's true spiritual husband, Jesus Christ. And so for the last 2,000 years, the Jews have been searching for another substitute husband who will take away the stigma of being a spiritual harlot from the nation. And someday they believe when their power is great enough, they will be able to appoint such a person as their Messiah, as their ruling dictator, and he will give them the physical riches of the world in place of the spiritual kingdom which Jesus prophesied.
Yeah, you know, you just connected Jews to Israelites, and I don't really see that in Scripture, that connection.
Well, I disagree with the identity position in that.
Okay.
My reading of history is that, of course, 597 B.C., the southern kingdom of Judah was exiled into Babylon, and they remained there for more than 1,600 years until the beginning of the 11th century A.D., and that was the great majority of Jews. 90% of the Jews stayed in Babylon and Judah.
But
now,
by Jews here again, are you meaning
Judeans,
to say Israelites, or are you meaning to say Jews? Because it's two different things.
Well, yeah.
In fact, there's basically three good definitions. I read an article just recently. It was actually 13 different definitions of the word Jew, but
yeah,
three key ones separating them into religion, either religion or racial or geographical, where they live. In other words, Judean, you know, like a Houstonian, or a religion, like just like being a Christian, you know, someone that practices Judaism,
mm-hmm.
or You see what I'm saying? So when you use the word, you have to define it, because most people don't really know what you're talking about. They think you're talking about an Israelite.
Well, if I were going to talk about an Israelite, I would talk about the descendants of the lost 10 tribes of Israel, the northern kingdom.
Well, that's
kingdom.
The whole point I was trying to make, because they went into the Syrian captivity.
Yeah.
So there was two captivities. And that first group was most of the Israelites. The second group
yeah.
was from Jerusalem, and that was mostly a tribe of Judah, which
That's
you
right.
could call which you could call racial if there were Jehudites. Yeah, you could call that Jew if you want
yeah.
to. But the way most people think about them today are not
mm-hmm.
are really not Israelites, because most of these people we know of today are either Edomite Jews or they're Khazars, but they're not from Israel.
Well, The thing is that historically, the southern kingdom of Judah Benjamin went into captivity in 597 B.C., and they stayed there till the beginning of the 11th century A.D., which is actually a longer period than the Hebrews occupied Palestine. So in Babylon, these Judeans, Jews, whatever you want to call them, they're descendants of the tribe of Judah, the southern kingdom of the tribe of Judah, were the vast bulk of Jews living in that time. Of course, there were about a tenth came back, a tenth of the population inhabited Palestine, came back under Ezra and Nehemiah and established a Judaic presence there in Palestine. And of course, as you were saying, there may have been some mongrelization as a result of Edomite influence, but even that's peripheral to the fact that the vast majority of Jews lived in Babylonia until the 11th century AD, and they were finally expelled, and then they moved primarily, of course, to the west, and all the way to Spain, all the way to Northern Europe, and so on. And so these Judeans, which are commonly called Jews, or in their truly genetic Jews, are usually called Sephardic Jews, meaning those which are descended from the Jews of Spain, Sephardim.
Right.
But there's also Oriental Jews, North African Jews, and so on.
That's why I said when you use a word, you got to kind of define it, because most people don't quite understand.
And the
point I was trying to make there, really, Reverend, is that, you know, the fact of the matter is, most of these people, I believe, that you're talking about are actually Zionists.
Well,
right?
What happened was around the middle of the 8th century, roughly middle of the 8th century A.D., the Eurasian region and country of the Khazars, Khazaria. The king of the Khazarians, it was a time when there was a lot of religion shopping going on by monarchs of the world at that time, and they invited the Khagan, or the head of the Khazar nation, which was a very large and populous military, commercial, artistic nation of very intelligent people in the Caucasus area. He invited the representatives of Islam, Christianity, and Judaism to come and state their case. And to make a long story short, he chose Judaism and pretty much convinced his nation to follow Judaism. And in fairly short time, evidently, they began to believe that they were the children of Abraham. They were descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob.
Right.
And in the process of the centuries that followed, Arthur Koestler, of course, has written his book, The 13th Tribe, but subsequent research, there's a website called Khazaria.com, and there's a fellow by the name of Kevin Allen Brook who has done very extensive research, and he's not an ideological partisan in any way. He's just a very interested researcher, and there does seem to be overwhelming evidence that the vast Eastern European populations of Jews in Central Europe, Eastern Europe, even Russia, and so on, were very largely descended from these Japhetic, not Semitic, but Japhetic Gentile proselytes to Judaism. And so they are commonly called Eastern European, quote-unquote, Jews, but actually they are largely proselytes. And then, of course, with the amalgamation of the Western Sephardic Orientals about the 16th and 17th centuries, as the Jews of Germany, France, and England, and so on, began to have more communication with the Eastern European so-called Jews, the Khazars, then there has been a lot of intermingling between them. But historically, the major figures of Zionism and most of the inhabitants, the settlers of Palestine during the 20th century, were from this Eastern European branch of so-called Judaism, who came down and became very, very avid Zionists. And most of them, in fact, all of them had a socialist, Bolshevik, communist, most of them had a communist Marxist past. And so they brought into Israel not only foreign genetic stock, but many socialist, communist, and anarchistic ideas, which were very, very foreign to the teachings of the Bible.
Right. That's what I was pointing. I was trying to get at, because in Israel, you got factions of people there that all call themselves Jews, and they're at odds with each other, because you got Orthodox Jews that don't like the Zionists.
And
they don't agree with them.
Yeah, that's right. And
so if you just say Jew, that paints a broad brush, is all
yeah.
I'm saying.
So
and
a lot
you
of
kinda,
this is,
kinda define who's really causing
yeah.
the problem and who isn't, because
sure, and it's by necessity and convenience that we have to do that under the circumstances of information giving and so on. But the fact of the matter is that the true Jews, the truly genetic descendants of those Babylonian vast numbers of Babylonian Jews that came out in the 11th century, those are the mostly Sephardic Oriental today, and they are relatively a small minority of only a quarter of Jews in the world today, or maybe even less than that.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe, just as an aside, I believe that, you know, back in the Old Testament, God cursed, you know, in the curses in Deuteronomy, God said, if you do not obey me and exercise justice and righteousness and mercy, I'm going to curse you. He said to be a very small people. And isn't it interesting that the present numbers of Sephardic or authentic Jews today is only about 3 million, and the number that Moses brought out of Egypt was around 2 million. And here we have 3,500 years passed, and they've only been able to increase their numbers by about a million and a half or so. And what a profound and striking fulfillment of God's curse, his prophetic judgments upon them for their rejection of Jesus.
Well, yeah, but here again, you'd have to go a lot farther than that before you convince me that these people have anything to do with Israel, the Israel in the Bible, the Israelites, the 12 tribes, because I just don't believe it exists. They don't show any of the signs of Israel is the reason I say that.
Well, of course,
any of the prophecies, none of it.
No, because they're in an apostate state. And
well,
Jesus
no,
said,
because they're really not Israel. that's I think that's the
well,
problem.
Well, they Jesus
really
said,
not.
You're not going to see me again until you say, blessed is he that cometh in the name of the Lord. And what he was basically saying there is when when the Jews rejected Jesus and crucified him in the 2,000 years ago, they burned their bridges in back of them. No longer were they going to be recipients of divine inspiration and prophetic unction and guidance from on high. And Jesus says, you're not going to see me. And so the whole system has become incredibly apostate as these evil Jewish leaders have, number one, led their own people into tremendous darkness, and then number two, are the eye of a tremendous conspiratorial octopus, which is now bracing itself and anticipating eventual world dominion, you see. And so
and using the United States to accomplish it.
Well, yeah, and this, you see, the whole methodology here says that it's necessary to tear down the Gentiles, necessary to tear down everything having to do with Christian civilization before this New World Order, Judaic New World Order, can be established. And
well,
that's
you know, if
very...
you explain this to these pastors, then what's the problem with them? Because
well,
they don't seem to get it.
Yeah, the problem is that you see, the Bible in the Old Testament is very specific. It says to the Hebrews in the time of the Exodus, it says, unless you obey me and you exercise righteousness and justice and mercy, even to the inhabitants of the land and the strangers in the land, it says, I'm not going to let you dwell in this land. I'm going to throw you out. And you're not going to come back in until you give me that kind of obedience. And there are a lot of verses in the Old Testament which are swept under the rug by evangelicals, making it very clear that God had conditional terms for occupying Palestine. And what has happened is that the evangelicals romanticizing the Jews say, well, you know, they have suffered so much, and wouldn't it be wonderful here after centuries of persecutions and exiles and pogroms and all this, if they just went back to their God's promised land, which God promised to Abraham unconditionally 4,000 years ago. And the problem is, God is very specific When God authorized Nebuchadnezzar to come in and to exile the Jewish rebels in 597 B.C., he spoke to Jeremiah and he said, you're supposed to tell these people that when they go into the lands of exile, into the lands of the dispersion, where the Jews are even to this day, they are to live in peace and seek the welfare and the peace of those nations in which they dwell. And in doing that, they will have peace. Well, the problem is that if you just seek the peace of your nations, according to the Foxmans and the ADL, you'll never get anywhere in bringing the Messiah into world rulership. It's necessary not to seek the peace of the nations, but to tear down the nations, tear down their morality, tear down their laws, tear down the Christian symbols and everything. And so what we have here is a very, very revolutionary and destructive contradiction to everything God told, instructed the Jews to do in the lands of their dispersion. And it's resulted into a global cancer of Jewish activism, subverting the very nation, the United States of America, which has provided such a wonderful haven and freedom from persecution for Jews after centuries of having been wanderers among the nations.
Yeah, well, all I'm saying is, you know, I'm all about solutions too, so I want to talk a little bit about solutions. But the reason I bring that up is because you already admit you've been at it a long time. So what is the problem with these pastors? They can't, are they blind? Are they ignorant? Or what is their problem?
Well, they take a very superficial reading of verses in the Old Testament where it says, "I will bless them that bless thee and curse them that curseth thee." Now, one of the ways that we can be one of the greatest blessings to the Jews, as I am, is to speak the whole truth to them of salvation, and speaking the gospel and speaking the whole truth and even reproving their evil blind guides who lead them. That is a very, very great blessing to a Jewish soul. And yet, the evangelicals say, well, that's cursing God's chosen people. You're not supposed to criticize them, because they're the apple of God's eye, and whoever curses them, God will curse. So there's an extremely childlike, primitive, simple interpretation of these Old Testament prophecies, which also says that God makes unconditional covenant promises to people and to nations and so on. And he's made an unconditional promise to the Jews that they can occupy Palestine in perpetuity. And yet the problem is that the Bible says, well, yes, God did make a covenant, but they have got to obey God and be humble in heart, and they've got to accept Jesus Christ in order to occupy a land which was sanctified and consecrated to holiness and to the glory of God. And so again the church is missing massive biblical truth, massive biblical requirements laid down thousands of years ago by God that says, no, the Jews don't have an unconditional right to anything. And we as believers don't have an unconditional right to salvation. We don't have an eternal security that we can say, well, I'm born again and I've got it made and God's got to take me to heaven whether he likes it or not. No, we have to play ball with God. The individual, every person has to obey God and come to God in trust and faith and walk in that light. And the same goes for the state of Israel. It has got to come and humble itself before Jesus Christ, bow the knee, and only then will he ever allow them to return to their promised land as a nation. And yet these great truths and these facts are swept under the rug, ignored by evangelicals, and the result is that they have allowed an antichrist military and ideological system into the Middle East, which is wreaking havoc in the region and embroiling the whole world in Mideast conflict, drawing in the United States and so on. And we're paying a bloody price for ignoring what the Bible really says about God's conditional terms toward the Jewish people.
What do you think it's going to take to correct it?
Well, that's the Gordian knot.
That's another question, but you know, it's fair enough. You've been at it a long time.
I've been chipping at that one a long time, believe me. And the the result, the bonus could be very great. If there's something like 70 million evangelicals in America, and if we could get them awakened to the truth about this anti-Christian conspiracy against them, we'd really, really have something to work with. My basic strategy, I make no secret of this, is I was able to dramatize the persecution of Christians under Lynn Abraham and ADL, persecution of Christians under ADL-inspired hate laws in Canada and Australia and so on. And what I'm attempting to do is to show the evangelicals that even though they may love these evil Jewish leaders, they are not loved in return. These evil Jewish leaders, the Naboreth and so on, are out to get them. And here's the evidence. Just recently, Reverend Stephen Boysen was not only indicted but found guilty in Canada of the hate crime, I believe it was of criticizing homosexuality. And what I do is I drive through these object lessons, these examples of how these Jewish activists are actually opposing Christianity and doing their very best, as I say, to put a noose around evangelicalism through hate crimes laws. One of the things which is very ominous in our government right now is that the U.S. Congress, about 4 years ago, voted unanimously to set up a Office of Global Anti-Semitism in the U.S. State Department. And this is, of course, entirely an ADL front. ADL provides all the statistics worldwide in order to run this Office of Global Anti-Semitism, but it has tremendous prestige because it's now speaking for the United States government. And I've written some articles about some of the reports which the Office of Global Anti-Semitism, the ADL office, has sent to Congress as a report on the status of anti-Semitism in the world. And what they're saying now very boldly, and I document this in a recent article about a month ago, is that they are saying now that the Christian belief, this is what our U.S. State Department is now saying. They're saying the Christian belief that the Jews had Christ killed 2,000 years ago is classic anti-Semitism. Now, this is a very shocking thing because Hitler is considered a classic anti-Semite. And here we see exactly what I've been prophesying will happen is that the evangelicals have been very lavish in their praise and support in Israel, but there is zero gratitude from these Jewish leaders on the other end. And in fact, they are working right now to define Bible-believing evangelical Christianity as a form of anti-Semitism. In fact, the very worst kind of anti-Semitism, classical anti-Semitism. And Abe Foxman in his book is very specific, saying that Christianity is a vicious, the Christian belief and the accusation that the Jews had killed Christ 2,000 years ago is actually the lie which brought about the Holocaust, the alleged Holocaust of Jews during the Second World War. And he also says that anti-Semitism as a worldwide phenomena is directly traceable back to the lies coming out of the Gospels, the Book of John, Book of Acts, and so on. So this is a tremendously ominous message which I'm giving to these Christians, and I believe that the Babylon the Great of Revelation 17 and 18 is nothing more than a world commercial media empire dominating the world, which is Judaic in origin, which goes right back to Ezekiel 16, where God chose Israel in the beginning, but she became a harlot. She became the mother of the principle of spiritual whoredom. And that was only underscored and exaggerated when the Jewish people killed their own Messiah. And with that kind of a background, you see, we can that kind of a cause, then we can see the terrible effects of that apostasy to this very moment.
Yeah, let's take a break for just a second. I want the people that we've got online, I want to mention that I do have a chat room open. If you have any questions for Reverend Ted Pike, you can type them in and I'll ask them online. or if you'd can call in to the show, we'd welcome you at 347-838-9147. You can call in and participate in the discussion. I'll get you up as soon as I see your number pop up. I'll try to get you up as quickly as possible. Also, Reverend Pike, if you'd back off from your microphone just slightly,
okay.
You get a little bit too much static and that kind of thing in,
okay.
in your mic there. It might mess up the audio a little bit. And if you back off a little bit, that might help a little bit more. So where you're at right now, how do you intend to reach most of the typical Christian people that are going to church on the weekends and that kind of thing? How do you plan on getting to these people with your message?
Well, I have been very successful in combating the federal hate crimes bill. We have been, our National Prayer Network has been very influential in defeating it about five times since it was first introduced in 1998. And gradually, the evangelicals are uniting in opposition to hate crimes legislation. And I was very important in alerting the church about what's going on in Canada and other European countries. And what's happening now is that WorldNet Daily, which is a huge Christian conservative web newspaper, they are producing a tremendous amount of articles regularly, once or twice a week at least, exposing the threat of hate crimes legislation and abuses of hate crimes laws, not only in countries like Canada, but even in U.S. states. And what's happening is that literally thousands of evangelicals are now coming to truthtellers.org. They're going immediately after. You see, there's 7 million people read WorldNet Daily every day. And they are now Googling. They're finding at Google under hate laws. They're finding that ADL dominates that, but also the National Prayer Network and Truth Tellers dominates the title hate laws. And they're going right over to truthtellers.org and getting a real eye-opening, mind-expanding amount of information from Truth Tellers. And so every month, the number of evangelicals that are coming is increasing. And I believe since nothing we say can be refuted, intelligently refuted, I'm just believing and praying and hoping that all of this massive truth that they are getting will begin to get into their consciences, percolate there, and begin to change their mind and bring truth and light where darkness has been before.
Yeah, so basically you're bypassing the churches and the pastors altogether since they're a lost cause, and you're going directly to the people.
Well, that's right.
I like to just, make it a little bit plain for people because that's what I got out of it.
You bet. Well, there's a definite trend of getting very scared about hate laws. The evangelicals and evangelical organizations are making it clear they're very concerned about this. And
they're not concerned enough. Hasn't Canada already had some convictions and so forth on hate laws?
Oh, yeah, lots of them, yeah. You see, back in 1971, after about 10 years of lobbying efforts by ADL, the Parliament in Ottawa passed the ADL hate law, and so Canada has had a federal hate crimes law since 1971, which is a long time. And primarily, they went after people who questioned the numbers of Holocausts or questioned the use of gas chambers to kill 6 million Jews and so on. They went after racist types and so on. But around the turn of the century, they started going after Christians. And there's quite a number of Christian individuals, Christian groups in Canada who have been under the jackboot of hate crimes enforcement in Canada. Section 319 of the federal law in Canada makes it a crime to verbally criticize or hold up to public contempt or humiliation members of federally protected groups, primarily homosexuals and Jews. So in Canada, a hate crime doesn't have to be involved with any kind of a violation or a criminal offense like it does in the United States. In Canada, all you have to do is open your big mouth in public, whether it's on a street corner, in a pulpit, or in radio, or in publishing, critical of homosexuality, and you are most certainly going to be convicted if someone complains. They'll take you to the hate crimes tribunal. There'll be one hearings officer there who is extremely biased against you. They have 100% conviction rates in these hate crimes tribunals in Canada. So they're very, very vindictive up there. Let's say I were to say on the airwaves in Canada that homosexuals have a higher rate of AIDS than the rest of the population. Certainly is a fact. And that will be confirmed by the disease center in Atlanta or whatever. But up there, that's considered holding homosexuals in contempt as a diseased minority. And your initial fine would be probably not less than $5,000 for saying that. And if you were on the radio and this radio station allowed you to say that, they would lose their broadcast license.
So in other words, the truth is not a defense.
No, the truth is not a defense in Canadian hate crimes tribunal courts.
Right. It
doesn't matter what kind of statistics or evidence or common sense you bring in. The only criteria of guilt in Canada is whether a member of a federally protected group, Jews, homosexuals, Indians, blacks, Chicanos, women, etc., feel that their feelings have been hurt by your speech. So this is just raw anti-speech thought crime legislation in Canada. Here in the United States, we are protected by the First Amendment, which says we can say virtually anything we want to say as long as it's not libelous, slanderous, or is inciting to riot or violence or something like that. But here in the United States, the ADL has had to modify their hate crimes definitions to say that a hate crime in the United States requires a commission of some kind of crime, small or great, even if it's stepping on somebody's flowers, getting off a sidewalk and trespassing. They can link that with bias motivation. Then you've got a hate crime in the United States, but it's got to have some kind of a violation of the law tied to it.
Yeah. Well, you know, our laws in the United States aren't quite what some people think anyway. I mean, after all, we give people tickets and take their money away from them, and we call speeding a crime. Who got injured? Was there an injury? Crimes are injuries.
Yeah, imperfect as our laws may be, the fact is that we historically have said that the punishment should fit the crime, and the crime should be definable. It should be a violation of traditional law, not hate crimes law, but traditional law of literally of the centuries and precedents of the centuries. And in other words, it has to be physical or tangible in order for the officer to come and to arrest you and certainly to have you indicted and so on. But up in Canada, you don't have to have any kind of a tangible crime involved. All you have to need is some words that made you feel bad about yourself.
Exactly. That's what I was trying to get at. Crimes are injuries. That's what they're supposed to be under common law.
That's
a crime,
right?
Is an injury, which was the point I was trying to make, you know. But we don't follow the law here. I don't know. We do have a first article of amendment. We don't really follow that because, after all, have you ever heard Judge Roy Moore speak?
Yeah, I know it.
Before? Yeah, and he's told the churches, look, they can't uphold 501c3. It's in opposition. It's null and void to Article 1, but yet they do it anyway. What it boils down to is, like you said, you can't get the pastors and the people involved, the general population, is just totally out of the picture. And they're not doing, the pastors, in my view, just aren't doing their job. They're not doing what they're supposed to be doing.
Yeah, the church today is ravaged by materialism, by unsound doctrine, by apathy, all of those things. We're in a state of, certainly not in a state of spiritual vigor and activism, where we've lost our salt. All of that figures in. On the other hand, I have been able to sound the alarm and to hold the ranks against a big federal hate bill, which is of absolute importance. We must not, even though we've got these state hate laws, we must not allow a federal hate crimes bill to be passed, because it's so vast in its empowerments and unified persecution that would come against the church. And I have been able to get support from some of the largest Christian conservative organizations in times of great threat in Congress, like this last year. They're slow to move. They have a tendency to be inattentive and so on. But sometimes when you can get them moving, these organizations like the American Family Association and Dobson and Family Research Council can bring in literally millions of calls to Congress when we need them. And the last spring, that's a year ago last spring, we did get that kind of rousing support from the evangelicals, very much waking them up, getting them involved, and so on. They dropped the ball a few times, and I was very, very distressed by some problems we had. In fact, tremendous problems of inattention to the threat in Congress. But nevertheless, we have been very successful in largely waking up the evangelicals. And WorldNet Daily is among evangelical media is showing itself very much with us and supportive, not of anti-Zionism or the Jewish issue, but of going after the hate crimes abuses.
Mm-hmm. Well, you still there?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Well, I heard a little noise there. I'm not sure what happened. Something come up on my screen here. At any rate, that would be great. But that's the whole point, you know. All these pastors and churches need to be working together, and I don't think they are, for the most part, working together for common causes. Number one, you know, I got on to a couple of pastors just here where I live, you know, about abortion, for example. They all stand up and, you know, they'll all call it murder and that kind of thing. And I asked them, there was a few of them got together one time, and I asked them, I said, when have you guys ever got together for a cup of coffee and even discuss how you're going to put an end to this? By your own words and your own admission, 50
uh-huh.
million murders have been committed. When yeah. are you going to put a stop to it? And they act like, you know, they don't have to do anything about
mm-hmm.
it. All they got to do
mm-hmm.
is say it's bad, and that's the end of what they're required
right.
to do.
Yeah. Well, not only that, but in their churches, they don't encourage people to be activists against these great evils, homosexuality, abortion, and so on. A person comes into an evangelical church with a petition against an abortion bill or something like that, they stand a very good chance of being censored and told by their pastor and the pastoral staff that they're not allowed to
yeah, like a
such,
99% chance.
Yeah, bring such quote-unquote controversy into the sanctuary. Well, the thing
yeah.
is that these are the very great moral issues of our time.
Right,
sodomy,
that's what they should be speaking about. That's what we hired them to do.
That's right. Sodomy,
yeah.
homosexuality, even Israel, Jewish domination, the media, war in the Middle East on behalf of Israel, all these are great moral issues.
Yeah.
And yet these little pastors, they set themselves up as little gods who can say, well, we're not going to allow moral issues to be discussed
yeah.
in the Church of God.
How crazy is that? You know what it really boils down to is just like, you know, I mean, I don't know, I think most people already know, but, you know, they're running a business. So when you get right down to it, they're incorporated, they're 501c3 businesses, and that's what they're doing. They're just running a business.
Well, the truth of the matter is most of the people don't realize this, but the people really lead the leaders. The leaders are dependent on the people for money. They
right.
have to have money for their big churches, money for their broadcasting empires, money for their publishing, and so on. And if the people uniformly tell the leaders, we want you to be supportive of Israel and we will not allow any criticism of Israel, or we will vacate and we will take our pocketbooks with us, then those leaders are not going to criticize Israel. But
right.
what I'm trying to do, of course, is to go directly to the people, as you mentioned, through the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And speak to them one-to-one outside of the interference of the pastors and begin to illuminate them so that we can have a build up a gradual consensus from the grassroots that people will allow evil Jewish leaders to be criticized, and that if the some national Christian leaders break ranks and do criticize Israel, then we will not desert them. We will continue to support them. You have the people beginning to lead the leaders in the right direction.
Isn't that a shame, though? You know what you just said, that we got to go outside of the church to educate people, when the church should be the very place that they're getting education from.
Well,
but we can't do it that way.
The problem is that historically, church systems begin to become corrupt in their leadership first. This was what Jesus encountered back in ancient Israel. When John the Baptist and Christ came on the scene, it was the Pharisees, the Sadducees, who had dominated the religious life of Israel and made the law of God of none effect. Well, that didn't stop Jesus. It didn't stop John the Baptist. They held their own meetings out in the field, out of the Jordan River, and they spoke to the common people, and the common people heard them gladly. And that's exactly what I'm doing at truthtellers.org, doing on the Internet, is getting my own bully pulpit outside of the church and speaking an alternative message that should be spoken, of course, in the church, but there's not really much chance of it.
Yeah, it's just not allowed. I got you. I've been through that same thing, fighting. I'm writing some stuff up on my own, about events that occur in church and really shouldn't. It should be, you should have your moral leaders there, getting people together to do things that are right, take care of the country, that kind of thing, but they're just totally missing in action. So
as long as our speech remains free, though, then we can continue to speak the whole truth.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why.
Yeah, just don't do it in church.
Yeah, that's just so vital. Even if we can't speak the truth in church, if we can speak it on the Internet,
yeah,
and speak it on talk radio like we're doing here tonight.
Well, I mean,
that's,
you're right. They are afraid of controversy, number one.
Yeah, well.
That somebody might leave the church. Somebody might not like that. They might leave the church. And then there goes your money.
Yeah.
See?
It's all about money, really.
It is.
Because
like you say, they got to maintain it and all that. I don't have a problem with them building big churches, but I think that money shouldn't come out of money that is supposed to go for our tithes.
Uh-huh.
Our tithes is to take care of the widows and the orphans, the people in need, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You want a big building, fine, build it, but don't take out of God's money.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, if we can keep our speech free here in the United States, then all of our other freedoms will stand a much better chance of staying intact.
That's a big if, isn't it?
Yeah.
After all, you just spent the last hour telling us how these people are trying to destroy that freedom.
Yeah. So
yeah.
What we have to do is, you see, what I'm waiting for now is the first of the year when we have a new president in office, and George Bush did promise to veto the federal hate bill, and the liberals had that hanging over him all year. But certainly we can't probably expect that next time around. So I'm going to be doing a lot of talk radio starting probably late December, January, and so on, and really leading the raising a human cry, because of course the ADL will introduce all of these bad bills that we were able to postpone or defeat in this last Congress. It's all coming in next January. So if I don't see you since till then, that just you do your part, we'll do our part to make sure that people are listening, and we'll be keeping everybody updated at truthtellers.org, especially next January, the bills coming in, where to phone, which committees to bombard, and so on. And
it's a shame, though. We shouldn't have to be telling people in Congress what to do.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole idea of putting them in there is because we thought they knew what to do.
we're having
to get together to tell them what it is that we want.
Well, if the pastors are led by the people, let me tell you, the politicians are even more led by the people. And the people who they are, either the ADL in the back rooms of Congress are going to get their attention and be persuading them, or the American people can raise a hue and cry.
Yeah.
So basically, I think that pretty much wraps up our talk here tonight. We've been talking about the greatest threat, I think, that has ever come against the Christian church and against civilization. And what's most important, of course, is that we all humble ourselves before our Creator, come before God in fasting and prayer at this time of very great danger for our republic. And God does have these things prophesied and fated. Great evil systems are described in Bible prophecy, but the truth of the matter is that he also makes it very clear in the Bible that if people will turn to him in contrition and humility and in penitence, that he is very capable of postponing these evil fated judgments. And I believe that we can do the same thing in the United States of America. We will turn to God and then take our resources and privileges to speak out and take advantage of those things. God, if we combine our faith with our works, I believe that God will greatly bless us.
You know, Reverend Pike, I don't know if you spent much time looking at this We the People group and what they're doing, but you know, they've had a lawsuit in front of the court now. 2,000 named plaintiffs on this lawsuit. It's been in the court since 2000. It went in front of the United States Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court just basically tossed it out and said, well, we don't have to listen to petitions from the people. Uh-huh. See? And we got seven main things here that we're saying that the government is violating the Constitution, and we've got it all there in detail in this lawsuit. And the government's just saying, well, we don't have to listen to you guys.
Yeah, I know it.
You know? So, you know, I know you say that, you know, well, the politicians listen to the people, but really I don't think they do so much. I think they listen to the people that paid them the big bucks to get in office and support them. Like you were saying, the media, you know, is behind a lot of this. Well, the media gets a lot of those people in office.
Well,
and makes it happen for them. And the people that own the media, the big names that own it, they're the ones that really get them in office. They don't work for us. They're just PR people.
Well, that is very largely true. But on the other hand, if people will go to truthtellers.org and read the chronology of our articles, especially about a year ago in the winter of maybe a year and a half ago now, you'll see very clearly, though, how we were able to bombard, literally bombard, the House Judiciary Committee with opposition to the hate crimes bill when it was first introduced in the January, I believe it was 2007. And I was on talk radio literally many, many dozens and dozens of times during crucial months of January and February, well before anybody in the religious right was doing anything at all. And we were able to inspire 11, no less than 11 Republican members of the House Judiciary Committee to stand to their feet. And we gave the impression of a massive protest against the hate bill. And this is without precedent. These 11 members of the House of Representatives all rose to their feet with amendments and objections to the hate crimes bill there in Conyers Committee, and that set a standard and set an example to the rest of the House. And literally that zeal which came in opposition to the hate crimes bill radiated out through the House of Representatives and even the Senate to defeat no less than five or six major pieces of Orwellian legislation in this Congress. This is a fantastic story of David against Goliath and how we went out there and led the way and changed.
I'll tell you what would be a more fantastic story is if we just killed Goliath
well,
like David did. So instead of fighting these people, just like you just said, it's going to come right back up next year. They're going to bring it right back up.
Yeah, but on the other,
you have to keep doing the exact same thing
over and over again. That's the price of liberty, you see. But meanwhile, the educational program is going forward into members of Congress, and educational program is radiating out through WorldNet Daily and Truth Tellers and so on, so that there's a vastly wider appreciation of the threat of hate crimes legislation we've ever seen in this country. And this is what we need to make the difference between what happened in Canada and what could happen in the United States. Up in Canada in 1971, they had no organized opposition to the hate crimes bill. ADL was able to slip it through just prior to a Christmas recess. Here in the United States, the Lord has been faithful to give us some truth tellers and people on the wall who cry out and enable, like Paul Revere, to sound the alarm at the crucial moment. And it's made all the difference. So what I say that because we are the far right and far right talk radio and so on are all too prone toward gloom and pessimism and so on. And that can be very deadly because there can be tremendous opportunities for action, and yet it can be swallowed up in pessimism when we could take action. And I agree.
I'm all about solutions. You know, I'm not trying to be negative, but what I am trying to point out is that, you know, like you said in your own words, they'll bring it right back up. You know, better just to get rid of the people that are anti-American and trying to destroy our country than to sit here and fight over and over and over.
We have to think of practical solutions, not everybody getting their pistols and pitchforks and going.
Well, I didn't mean it that way. I meant vote them out of office, get them out of Congress, whoever it is that's causing the problem.
Yeah,
we need to identify them and go about it that way. You know,
sure,
we can get to vote them out.
I've been in this business a long time from my cradle, and I've always heard that we got to vote them out, organize everything, and. Fact is, it's an entrenched great evil, which is buttressed by the media, buttressed by our whole educational system, and so on, and entrenched to liberalism in high places, in addition to all kinds of backroom Masonic, Illuminist, all that stuff in power. You see, so.
Right.
Hey, I'm going to have to take off here.
Oh well, you can talk as long as you want. Okay.
Okay. Yeah, I think I've said what I have to tonight, and
okay.
I'm happy to put up this broadcast on truthtellers.org if you want to email it to truthtellers, Ted Pike at truthtellers.org, we'll put it.
Yeah,
up.
Well, it's simple enough. You can come back as soon as it's archived, which will probably take about 15 minutes.
Oh, okay.
You come right back to your archive on the main page there. It'll look just like the one below yours, and where it says share. That'll give you an embed code to embed the player, and then it'll play automatically.
Okay. And again, what is your website?
Yeah, it's Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio is not mine, of course, but okay. So it's blogtalkradio.com/WTP for We the People - Texas. I originally started as just a Texas show, but we just kind of dropped the Texas part and just left it.
Okay.
At any rate, blogtalkradio.com/WTP-Texas is the actual web address, and then yours will be archived in a few minutes.
Okay, good enough.
And download it as an MP3 or hit the share, and that'll give you some embed code to put it on your site.
Okay, good enough. We'll do that. Okay, it's been a pleasure being with you, David.
I appreciate you being here. If you want to come back, anytime.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye. All right, well, that was a good show. Next week, I've got a couple of people lined up. I'll try to get that posted ASAP. And by the way, for everybody listening, if they like one of these particular shows, as I was explaining to Reverend Pike, if you look on the main page here, any of these particular shows, if you want them to play on your website or blog, if you click, you can hit the play button and just listen to it on Blog Talk Radio. You can click download and you can save it as an MP3, or you can click share and it will give you embed code, where it'll give you the code to embed a player. The player looks kind of like the one over on the right-hand side of the page. At any rate, you'll get a player that'll play just that specific show if you click on one of those shows and click share. There's also embed code on the right-hand side of the main page here under the player, and that's a player which you can put on a blog. That'll just play the last show, whatever the last show was. That's what it starts playing. So, and there's a little banner down below that just says Blog Talk Radio. You can put that on your website, and people click that, and it comes to the show. So I appreciate everybody being here. We'll see you next Tuesday, probably Tuesday. Most shows are Tuesday night. Thanks a lot.